Welcome to Soils at Work, the biology of soil health, an initiative of the Compost Council of Canada, Penner Waste, Overton Environmental, EnviroClean Connections, The Forks, Cities of Brandon, Portage-la-Prairie, Steinbach, and Winnipeg, and the members of the Compost Quality Alliance, supported with funding through Manitoba Conservation and Climate, and Growing Forward 2, a federal-provincial territorial initiative. The Compost Council of Canada and our compost facilities are excited to offer this learning through workshops as well as webinars and online education, providing classrooms at your own convenience and at your own pace, such as this audio learning program. This is Chapter 1 of our 8-chapter series. So let's begin. Chapter 1. What is soil health? Section 1. The soil food web. The story of soil health starts with the realization that soil is alive, not like an individual is alive, but in the sense of a community or ecosystem. A single handful of healthy soil will contain thousands of species of organisms and millions of individuals. So when we speak of healthy soil, we're not referring to the physical elements such as particles of clay, silt, or sand. We are actually speaking of the health of a community of organisms living in the physical environment we call soil. But what does the health of such a community really mean? What does a living community of organisms require in order to be healthy? And what are the implications of these needs for us as human beings? This primer attempts to answer some of these questions. We will be basing our answers on the latest science, but we will be presenting them in a more user-friendly and practical manner than you will find in a scientific paper or textbook. We will be referring to this underground community as the soil food web, which is a term used by scientists to describe the various life forms in the soil and the relationships between them. Just as is the case with above-ground ecosystems, the soil hosts a hierarchy of organisms, with those at higher levels consuming those in the lower levels. This who-eats-whom story is very important for fertility, as we will see in Chapter 3. However, it is only part of an even greater story. Just as is the case with above-ground ecosystems, the soil hosts a hierarchy of organisms with those at higher levels consuming those in the lower levels. This who-eats-whom story is very important for fertility, as we will see in Chapter 3. However, it is only part of an even greater story. Just as in our own communities, who does what and how they do it really matters, not just to the organisms in the soil food web, but to those of us above ground as well. Everything on Earth starts with the sun, and soil is no exception. The creatures below ground get their energy from the sun, just like those of us above ground. But it happens a little more indirectly. Plants are the original or primary energy producers, using photosynthesis to convert the sun's energy into biochemical energy in the form of sugars. The creatures below ground are fed by that energy, either in the form of organic wastes or through direct contributions from plants. Underground, it all begins with the bacteria and fungi at the lowest level. They are the decomposers, and it continues up to the insects and worms at the top of the underground world. In this chapter, we will look at the various members of the soil food web, describing in general terms what they look like, where they get their energy and resources, and what their primary roles are within the soil food web. In later chapters, we will expand on these descriptions, specifically as they relate to the soil functions of most interest to farmers. However, before we jump into descriptions of the organisms in the soil food web, we should pull back for a quick look at how scientists classify life forms in general. Our planet's life forms are organized at the highest level into what are called domains. Until fairly recently, scientists recognized two domains, which they named prokaryotes, consisting entirely of bacteria, and eukaryotes, consisting of everything else. Prokaryotes are defined as single-celled organisms with no nucleus or other internal organs. Eukaryotes consist of all single-celled organisms that do contain a nucleus, along with defined organelles such as amoebae, plus all multi-celled organisms such as you, your dog, your potted plant, and the tiny aphid eating your plant. More recently, with the advent of better methods of assessing genetic material, a new domain was born, the archaea. These are also prokaryotes and are pretty much indistinguishable from bacteria under the microscope. However, genetically, they are as different from bacteria as they are from plants and animals. They tend to live in extreme environments such as undersea vents and salt marshes, as they can withstand extreme conditions. Archaea are also present in soils, but their contributions to the functions of the soil food web are not significantly different from those of bacteria. So for all intents and purposes, and to make the discussion less complicated, the two domains we will consider here are the bacteria and the eukaryotes. Within these two domains are five kingdoms. Bacteria comprise the soul kingdom in their own domain, whereas the prokaryotes boast four kingdoms. These are protists, fungi, plants, and animals. Of particular note is the fact that fungi are more closely related to plants and animals than to bacteria. Now that we have set out the big picture of how scientists have organized life, we can dive down into the weeds and take a closer look at the organisms that are responsible for the health of our soils, the denizens of the soil food web. Section 2, Bacteria, the resilient workforce. Bacteria are the smallest members of the soil food web, but the most numerous. They are everywhere on our planet, including inside and all over our bodies, and the bodies of all living creatures. If all living things except bacteria were to suddenly vaporize and disappear, the outline of everything that had vanished would still exist in the ghostly form of the bacteria that remained. You can see why they have been given their own domain. In their own way, they are silently and invisibly dominant. In terms of their contribution to soils, you can think of them as the boots on the ground workforce, because they can take a licking and keep on ticking. In part, this resilience is because they reproduce very quickly, so knocking their populations back is usually a temporary situation. However, like all other underground organisms, they do need a regular source of energy to thrive and perform their various functions effectively. Aside from being incredibly numerous, the other most notable fact regarding bacteria is that they are very, very small. In general, they are a fraction of a micron in diameter and up to a few microns in length. A micron equals 1/1,000,000th of a meter. How small is this? If you line them up side by side in one row on one of your fingernails like a military unit, you would need between 10,000 and 20,000 of them to stretch from one side to the other, depending on the size of your nail. Despite their tiny size, however, the total weight of bacteria in soil can amount to 1 to 2 tons per hectare in temperate grasslands. So there really are a lot of them. In fact, as little as 1 gram of healthy soil, about a teaspoon, will contain millions of individual bacteria and thousands of different species. They also come in a variety of shapes and sizes, with spheres, rods, and spirals among the most common types. One of the characteristics scientists use to categorize soil microbes is by how they get their energy. A few types are what scientists call autotrophs. That is, like plants, they are able to photosynthesize, thereby getting their energy, in the form of carbon, directly from sunlight and the air. However, these are a tiny minority. For the majority of soil microbes, there are three main routes. They can get energy by consuming organic residues. These are called decomposers. Forming a mutually beneficial relationship with another organism, usually a plant. These are known as mutualists, or feeding off living organisms, commonly called parasites or pathogens. There are many types of pathogenic or parasitic bacteria. Fortunately, the first two categories greatly outnumber the last one, at least in healthy soils. More on this in Chapter 4. In general, decomposers are the most well-known bacteria. Just about everyone understands that bacteria are what cause rot and decay. Another fairly well-known group includes the rhizobium bacteria that colonize the roots of legumes and fix nitrogen from the atmosphere into a form usable by plants. These are generally well appreciated, especially by farmers. Not so well known, however, are the several types of free-living nitrogen fixers who perform the same function while working as freelancers, as opposed to being under contract to specific plants. These are also mutualists, as they do their work in return for payment in the form of plant root exudates. More on this in Chapter 3. Bacteria are also fundamental to the nitrogen cycle in soil, and we will also discuss this further in Chapter 3. However, bacteria perform many other functions as well. For instance, they are able to secrete chemicals that can break down minerals, releasing nutrients that they then take into their bodies. Some can produce antibiotics that kill other organisms, including pathogenic bacteria. Also, given the proper conditions, the good guy bacteria can outcompete the destructive organisms in soil, ensuring overall ecosystem health. Section 3. Fungi, the networkers. The other organisms sharing this important niche at the base of the soil food web are the fungi. As mentioned earlier, fungi are more closely related to plants and animals than they are to bacteria. In fact, some scientists consider them more closely related to animals than plants, which may seem counterintuitive to most of us. They are more complex than bacteria, beginning with the fact that most types have many cells rather than just one. They spread through the production of long, thin filaments known as hyphae, which can have considerable length, but are only a few microns in width. When we see their white strands in soil, particularly forest soils, we are not seeing individual hyphae, which are microscopic. We are actually looking at mycelia, which consist of many intertwined hyphae, numerous to the point of being visible to the naked eye. Like bacteria, when classified by energy source, there are three main types of fungi: decomposers, mutualists, and pathogens. The decomposers are important because they are able to break down some of the tougher organic materials, things that resist bacterial breakdown, such as lignin, one of the main components in woody material. Fungi and bacteria are therefore complementary factions of the decomposition process of organic residuals. You need both in most soils to get efficient nutrient turnover. Again, like bacteria, fungi also include an important group of mutualists. These are known as mycorrhizal fungi, and there are many different species. The word mycorrhizal means fungus roots in Greek, and it refers to the fact that these fungi form an association with plant roots that is beneficial to both parties. The plants feed the fungus directly through these root contacts, providing it with the energy-rich products of photosynthesis. In return, the fungus uses its spreading network of hyphae to scavenge for nutrients and water, which it uses to pay the plant for its sugar. These fungi are also able to solubilize nutrients out of minerals, so they have a complex, vital set of roles in the underground community. As we will see in later chapters, mycorrhizal fungi are more than just recyclers. They are also miners, truck drivers, traders, messengers, and water managers. Of course, pathogenic fungi are also extremely important, but for all the wrong reasons. Fungal species of both Verticillium and Fusarium, for instance, are the cause of major crop losses every year. Fungi have an enormous impact on soil functions, and these impacts appear to grow stronger as soils become healthier. Like bacteria, fungi's base of the food web counterpart, they are very important for nutrient cycling, soil building, as we will see in Chapter 3, and certain symbiotic activities. However, fungi are much more complicated organisms than bacteria, and the list of the ways they impact soil and soil health is impressive. We will be discussing fungi in more detail in later chapters, but the following is a quick summary of some of the benefits fungi bring to soil. Approximately 80 to 90% of all plants form symbiotic mycorrhizal fungi relationships, in which the mycorrhizae assist the plant in acquiring nitrogen, phosphorus, micronutrients, and water in exchange for sugar produced by the plant through photosynthesis. Some fungi help to control diseases. Fungi can also help to control predators, such as nematode-trapping fungi that feed on insect pests. In fact, many fungi can be used as biological controls. Beneficial fungi benefit most plants by suppressing plant root diseases and attacking plant pathogens and fungal enzymes. Some fungi produce chemicals that promote plant growth. Fungi also protect plants by supplying a protective sheath to supply both water and phosphorus to the plant roots during droughts. Section 4. Protozoa and nematodes, the predators. Protozoa inhabit the next level up in the soil. They are the smallest predators. Like bacteria, they are one-celled organisms. However, they are larger than bacteria, and their cells have a nucleus and organelles, in other words, a higher level of organization than bacteria. This makes them eukaryotes, more closely related to plants and animals than to bacteria. They eat bacteria, lots of them. They scoop them up and assimilate the nutrient-rich bacterial bodies, creating their own larger pool of nutrients, many of which are secreted in plant-available form, in their wastes, or when they die. There are three basic categories of protozoa in soils: flagellates, amoebae, and ciliates. They are differentiated by their structure. Bacteria are the primary diet of protozoa. Fungi are a much more less common food source. Nematodes are the other major microscopic predators of the soil food web, but they are very different from protozoa. Full-fledged, multicellular eukaryotes, nematodes are non-segmented, microscopic worms. While they do not make up the largest organism, as measured by biomass, in the soil, they are very common in all environments, and they are the most abundant multicellular organism on the planet. The agricultural perspective on nematodes has generally been colored largely by the damage done by the pest variety, that is, root feeders. However, that's only one type, and most nematodes are beneficial in soils. The beneficial nematodes get their energy by consuming other organisms, bacteria, fungi, protozoa, and other smaller nematodes, including the root feeders. In doing so, they perform a similar function to protozoa, collecting and releasing nutrients. Textbooks call this nutrient cycling, and we will discuss this function of nematodes in more detail in Chapter 3. Some nematodes are also useful for controlling insect pests. These are the type that are available commercially and sometimes used by turf managers. They burrow into the larvae of insect pests and eat them from the inside out, a form of parasitism. Other predatory nematodes attack smaller nematodes, including the root feeders. Overall, nematodes play a very important role in the soil food web, and despite the damage occasionally done by root feeders, most of what they do is helpful to farmers. Section 5. Arthropods, the facilitators. Arthropods comprise a group of organisms that includes insects, arachnids, spiders and scorpions, and myriapods, centipedes and millipedes. They are very numerous in healthy soils. Although being higher level organisms that are quite large relative to microbes, they do not have anywhere close to the same total numbers as bacteria, fungi, protozoa, or nematodes. They are not microscopic, easily visible to the naked eye, and range in size from barely visible, such as mites, to hard to miss, such as spiders and centipedes. These creatures perform many valuable services in the soil, including reducing the size of organic matter by chewing, making more surface area available to bacteria and fungi, excreting nutrient-rich material in their wastes, again, making more food available for further processing by the smaller members of the food web, keeping pathogenic organisms under control through predation and competition, loosening the soil and making air and water passages by means of their burrowing, providing transportation services to microbes, who will hitch a ride to other areas of the soil, either on arthropod surfaces or inside their digestive systems. They are secreted in the fecal pellets. As with other members of the soil food web, these creatures thrive when the environment is good for their movement, reproduction, etc. The beneficial ones are usually much more numerous than the pests when the soil is healthy. As conditions deteriorate, compaction, reduced oxygen, their numbers tend to drop relative to pest numbers, resulting in more crop damage. Section 6. Earthworms, the soil's heavy hitters. Earthworms are generally considered to be at the very top of the underground food web. They perform all of the benefits listed above and are particularly prized for their ability to both improve soil structure and enhance fertility. Earthworms are synonymous with healthy soil, and for good reason. They are both important indicators and promoters of soil health. According to Dr. Jill Clapperton, one of North America's leading experts on soil health and the soil food web, a farmer should have 5 or more earthworms per spade or shovel full of topsoil. Moreover, this is a minimum. The more, the better. Farmers often state that one of the ways they can tell that the health of their soil is improving is the appearance of worm middens, which are little piles on the soil surface made up of a mixture of organic residues and worm feces. It appears as though the worms magically appear as the soil gets better, but in fact, it is a virtuous circle that is occurring because the worms are also improving the soil as they migrate in and reproduce. Worms turn the soil, but not in the destructive way that tillage often does. The worm's turning is gentle and slow and does not destroy soil structure. In fact, it improves it. Worms' burrows provide roots with easy channels for growth. Those same channels also allow easier infiltration of water during rainfalls and better infiltration of air, and thus oxygen, all of the time. Last but not least, worms fertilize soils. Their casts are rich not only in nutrients but also in beneficial microbes. When worms consume organic matter, it goes into their intestinal tracts, which act like hothouses for these good microbes. Accordingly, the casts they release hold orders of magnitude more beneficial than the ambient soil. As they travel through the soil, they inoculate it with microbial activity. By doing so, they spread greatly increased numbers of beneficial organisms all around the farm field, increasing its fertility significantly. How do worms know to come to farms with healthy soils? From how far away do they come? Or are the increased number of worms that farmers soon see when they apply soil health practices simply a result of increased levels of reproduction of the worms already there? Or perhaps an increase in hatching of cocoons, that is, worm eggs, that have been in the soil for some time? We don't know for sure, but it certainly seems to be that if you build a good soil, worms will come. Section 7. What are soil functions? Healthy soils provide humans, and in fact all life on the planet, with many benefits. These include clean and abundant water, the fertility necessary to grow our food, enhanced above-ground biodiversity, clean air, and last but not least, a moderate climate. If you think these claims may be extreme, think about the planet Mars. The soils there, as far as we can tell, are dead, and almost certainly, as a consequence, the planet has no life above ground either. As those of you who read science fiction will know, any future plan to terraform Mars, that is, make it like Earth, holding abundant life, will probably begin with the parachuting in of carefully selected varieties of soil microbes. Get the soil working, and the rest of the planet will follow. Back here on Earth, we can define soil functions as simply the processes through which the soil supplies a number of specific benefits of value both to the creatures living in the soil and those above ground, including us. Given this primer's agricultural mandate, we will focus here on four sets of functions. In Chapter 2, we will discuss soil structure and its importance to water management. In Chapter 3, we will talk about how soil fertility is created and maintained in natural systems. In Chapter 4, we will focus on the role of soil biology in pest and disease suppression. And in Chapter 5, we will discuss soil carbon, its vital role in agriculture, along with its important relationship to climate. This ends Chapter 1. Thanks very much for listening. This chapter, along with seven others, is part of Soils at Work, The Biology of Soil Health, an initiative of the Compost Council of Canada, Penner Waste, Overton Environmental, EnviroClean Connections, The Forks, cities of Brandon, Portage-la Prairie, Steinbach, and Winnipeg, and the members of the Compost Quality Alliance, supported with funding through Manitoba Conservation and Climate, and Growing Forward 2, a federal-provincial territorial initiative. The Council invites you to take the self-managed quiz found at www.compost.org to help test your understanding of the information provided and become a soil builder. Remember to follow these important steps to be a soil builder. Cover the soil, keep roots in the ground, add compost and optimize other inputs, support plant and soil diversity, minimize soil disturbance. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your interest.